Good afternoon, it's time for a Juno afternoon for Tuesday, the 5th of January, the year 2016. I'm Jeff Brown, I'll be your host for today. Today we'll talk with Beth Weigel and Andy Hirsch about the upcoming library activities. We'll get a preview of Perseverance Theater's worldwide premiere of Our Voices Will Be Heard. We'll find out about this weekend's Jump Society Film Festival. And we'll talk with Sunny Hayden and Donna Knight-Staten about their Thursday's Compassionate Friends Meeting. That Writer's Almanac, Burnout Music and More today on a Juno afternoon. Well, the forecast for today, clear skies, low temperatures 15 to 27 degrees with light winds. Forecast for Wednesday, sunny weather with high temperatures 26 to 35. Wednesday night, partly cloudy skies with low temperatures 21 to 27 degrees.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Two Canadian universities are making Indigenous studies a requirement. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, the course will begin in September 2016.
The University of Winnipeg in Manitoba and Lakehead University in Thunder Bay in Northern Ontario are the two universities to make Indigenous studies a requirement for every undergraduate student. It will also allow every student to learn about the traditions, history, and current socio-political issues facing First Nations across the country. Wab Kanu is the Associate Vice President of Indigenous Studies at the University of Winnipeg. He says the push for these courses came from the students themselves after several incidents of racism on the campus.
And they started to strategize about how they might respond. And what they came up with was the idea that, you know, education could play a role in fighting racism. Education towards combating ignorance. And so they decided to propose to the university's Senate and to the university administration that we mandate that every undergraduate student should be required to take at least one course that teaches about First Nations, Métis, and Inuit peoples.
Kanu says many acknowledge that learning about Canada's Indigenous people is a key to being an actively engaged citizen, and something that he says everyone in the country should at least have a basic understanding of. Since the initiative, the University of Winnipeg has been contacted by several other universities to find out how they too can set up similar courses. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
The Iowa Tribe of Oklahoma plans to launch an internet casino that could set a precedent for other tribes across the country. As KGOU's Brian Hardzinski reports, the tribe wants to launch the online poker site as soon as possible.
Last month, a federal judge in Oklahoma certified a ruling by an arbiter that said the plan to offer online gaming would not violate state or federal law. The Iowa tribe's current compact with the state includes so-called covered games like electronic poker, bingo, and blackjack. Retired Oklahoma appellate court judge Charles Chappell served as the arbiter and basically said there's no difference between opening a casino on tribal land and offering online gambling in states where it's legal and around the world. A spokesman for Governor Mary Fallon said the arbiter's ruling would apply to other tribes in Oklahoma. The Iowa tribe is working with a Florida-based software developer to set up the gambling website. For National Native News, I'm Brian Hardzinski in Norman, Oklahoma.
Environmental activist Winona LaDuke says constitutional reform is one of her priorities as she enters a bid to become chair of the White Earth Nation in Minnesota. The Forum News Service lists her priorities, including boosting the White Earth economy and changing how low-level offenses are treated. LaDuke announced she's running for the leadership position after the Minnesota Chippewa Tribe, a tribal government responsible for six bands, including White Earth, recently removed Chairwoman Irma Visner from its governing board. The White Earth Tribal Council will decide whether to remove her from office. The tribe's 2016 election is months away. Visner is being accused of improper use of authority. LaDuke, known for her pipeline protests, heads the group Honor the Earth. She was the Green Party vice presidential candidate in 1996 and 2000. Services are planned this week in Red Lake, Minnesota for Rose Downwind, the granddaughter of American Indian Movement co-founder Dennis Banks. Downwind, who went missing in Bemidji in October, was found weeks later in a shallow forest grave. After the mother of five was reported missing, family and friends were among those looking for her, which included the creation of a Facebook group. The page, with more than 4,500 members, is now full of condolences and remembrances. The 31-year-old is believed to have been killed in October. Two men have been arrested in connection with her death. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation is accepting artwork and reservations for the Alaska Native Art Auction, taking place February 18, 2016 in Anchorage, Alaska. Over 400 business leaders and executives attend this annual event. Proceeds benefit Kiwanis News programming. Learn more at knba.org.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned to KTO News in Juneau and Karen FM in Juneau. In the studio with me now are Beth Weigel and Andy Hirsch talking about upcoming library activities. Thanks for coming down to the station today.
Thank you.
So you got a whole bunch of things happening.
Yeah, we do. Actually, you know, we're kind of re-engaging with all of our programs that we put on hold during the holidays. So toddler times, story times are happening again at all three of our branches. And we're also bringing back Cuenta Cuentas Infantil, which was the story time in Spanish that one of our colleagues does. And that's going to now be on 5:30 on Mondays at the Mendenhall Valley Library. So that's coming back. So if you speak Spanish and want to come to a Spanish-speaking story time, check that out.
Bueno.
Yes. And, of course, ongoing Tlingit Language Learners Group, and that's on Monday nights as well at the Downtown Library. So all those things are back in action, and we've got some other special things that happen in this month, including our Lego Club, which is just up and going. It's going to be a regular program every first Wednesday of the month. Our friend Ty Keltner comes in and gives some challenges, and the kids can just build with our library Legos. And that's out at the Valley Library, so Wednesday tomorrow, and that'll be in the teen room, although you don't have to be a teen to get into the Lego Club. So that's happening tomorrow night. We're also going to be the host now for Wildlife Wednesdays, and we've partnered up with the Southeast Chapter of the Alaska Wildlife Alliance, and so tomorrow night we'll also be hosting the first Wildlife Wednesday of the year with Karen McCoy from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, and I think they're coming on the show tomorrow to talk a little bit more about what she'll be speaking on, but I know it has to do with managing Sitka black-tailed deer populations, so it sounds really fascinating. And our downtown family night is Thursday, January 7th, and we're going to continue on that theme of Spanish story time, and we'll have Olga, our co-worker who does the Cuenta Cuentas Infantil. She'll be our special guest, so we'll sing some songs in Spanish and have a great time with that. Of course, craft and light supper are included. That starts at 5:30 downtown on Thursday. And then because the kids don't have school on January 15th, we're going to do a Science Friday. And we thought it'd be pretty fun to kind of connect with the excitement around Star Wars and the Force and think a little bit about what is the Force, Forced Motion in particular. So we'll be building some balloon starship speeders and talking a little bit about how force works using thrust and pressure, and we'll hopefully have a scientist on hand to talk a little bit about those concepts, and then we'll do some hands-on working with the experiment, and then we're also going to have some special guests show up. So the 501st Legion Vader's Fist is a, what would you call that, Andy?
Professional level cosplayers, people who make the most amazing costumes, that could be on set if they wanted to be.
Right. So we'll have some of those characters showing up for the latter part of our Science Friday just to see how everyone's force is working at that point.
I am your father, Lou.
Don't give anything away. Yeah. So that's January 15th out at the Valley Library from 1 to 3 p.m., and we expect that to be a really great time. It's geared towards kids ages 8 to 14, but we're always welcoming to any age level. If kids are under 8, we want the parents to be there to help them a little bit with the manipulation of our hands-on activity. Just a reminder, we'll be closed on Martin Luther King Day on January 18th, and then we'll have our Thursday, third Thursday preschool family night with AEYC. It'll be the theme of communication and language and literacy, so that's always a fun night, and that's now out at the Valley Library starting at 5:30. And we have a craft and light supper those evenings as well, and children receive a free book that they get to take home. And then we'll wrap up our programming for the month at the end on Saturday, January 23rd. We'll have game day again at the library. This has become a really popular event. You have the whole large meeting room in the valley there, and there's hundreds of games that you can come in and play. People spend the day, and we team up with the Platypus Gaming Group, and they bring their games. We have some of our own games. If you have a game that you really love and want to bring it in. You'll probably find some people to play with. Andy's been going to them and helping host them here for the last several months, so it's always a good time, right?
It is. It's fantastic.
So lots of fun events at the library. And just to give you a sneak peek into some things that are going to be happening that we'll be looking for people to sign up for, we're going to be doing a first LEGO League Junior, so for the younger kids who want to get involved with LEGO League, with JEDC, and they're going to put out a sign-up form. We can form some teams, so in mid-February we'll start that, but this is the time to start thinking about signing up some teams with your younger kids. And we'll also be doing a Science on Screen in collaboration with the University of Alaska Southeast at the beginning of February with Robin Walls and screening Elephant Man, and he'll be talking a little bit about Elephant Man and the effects of that film and how that sort of reconfigured our way we view body and things like that. So it'll be an interesting talk and film to connect with.
And you've got some technological news.
I do. So I'm very, very happy to talk about. The library has picked up a subscription to lynda.com. And lynda.com is an online library that has software tools and skills and uses high-quality instructional videos so that people can learn how to do lots of different things. So the library picked up a subscription, which means now everybody in Juneau can log in with their library card number and have access to their hundreds of thousands of courses and videos. So they include tons of different subjects. There's courses in 3D and animation and how to edit audio and CAD and how to use photography and marketing and web building and all sorts of different things, including they have a lot of stuff in how to use your software. So if you have a Microsoft product or Adobe Creative Suites, or you have AutoCAD for work, or you download Audacity, which is a free open source audio editor, there are multi-hour courses that will teach you exactly how to do all of these things. It will run you through how to download the software and install it to how to use it the most really effectively, the most effective that you can do. So I personally took a course in how to use Audacity, the open source audio software, because I needed to edit audio files. And so I learned how to edit, I learned how to import, I learned how to, you know, make really nice audio clips. So I'm very excited about it.
And the thing about lynda.com, it's L-Y-N-D-A.com.
It is, L-Y-N-D-A.
And they deliver it in small chunks. You don't have to watch a four-hour lecture.
Exactly. So it's very search-friendly. So within a course, everything is subdivided. So you may be able to skip. If you already have something installed, you can skip that section and go somewhere else to what you're really interested in. And so you can do an entire course, or you can do little 2 to 4 minute sections of, oh, I only need to know how to do this specific thing. So you can find how to do that specific thing.
And how do they access lynda.com?
Oh, so you could go there directly, but then they'll be like, hey, give us some money, which you don't have to do because of the library. So instead, what you need to do is go to the library's website, which is www.juno.org/library, and then you go click on the research tab, and that's where we have all of our databases. So you can find it under databases A to Z under lynda.com, or by subject, science and technology. So if you go through the link that is on our web page, then it will ask you for your library card number, which you put in, and then you're good to go.
And you don't have to be in the building, right?
No, you can do this from home. You could do this from not Juno. You could do this from space. You could do this from anywhere. Probably not space. I'm a liar. So.
It seems like there's something going on in the library every day.
It's true. Well, we're open every day except for a few holidays. So we've always got lots of things happening at the library, and particularly now out at the New Valley Library. We've got, you know, kids coming in after school to use the teen room and the study rooms, and so that the volume of people coming in out there has really increased a lot. And I did also want to mention we still have ongoing, because we have a little extension for our StoryCorps at your library grant, people who are still interested in coming in and doing StoryCorps interviews on the theme of Alaska Native educational experiences, we still have that program going on till the end of March. So if you're interested in recording a story or interviewing someone who you maybe think of as a mentor or a family member who you want to kind of, you know, talk to them a little bit about, hey, what was it like when you were a kid going to school, or some of the things that have been going on, I think that, you know, it pairs up really well with Perseverance Theater's play that's coming up. So, you know, there's a lot of talking about these kinds of issues. So if you want to be part of the StoryCorps program, give us a call at the library, and we can set that up, and you can interview whoever you'd like.
What's the phone number for the library?
The phone number for the library is, my phone number is 586-0434, and that's how you get a hold of me for the StoryCorps project. And
but the main line is 586-5249. So you can always call the main line, and they will put you in touch with whoever you need to be in touch with, or they'll answer your questions themselves, because the library is full of really smart people.
Right. So reference questions, whatever.
All right. Beth Weigel and Andy Hirsch, thanks for coming by. Anything you'd like to add, I might have forgotten to ask.
Just check us out on our website or Facebook page, and we'll see you at the library.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 5th of January, 2016. It's Twelfth Night. It's the eve of Epiphany, the official end of the Christmas holiday season, day on which many people take down their Christmas decorations. The poet Robert Herrick wrote, "Down with the rosemary, and so down with the bays and mistletoe, down with the holly, ivy, all wherewith ye dressed the Christmas hall." And back when it was a big night, it was the last hurrah of Yuletide before everybody went back to the workaday world of the rest of the year. It was tradition, Twelfth Night, to choose a king and a queen for the festivities. Usually this involved a plum cake baked with a bean and a pea inside. If a man finds the bean, he's crowned the king, also known as the Lord of Misrule. The woman who finds the pea crowned the queen. It was a night of practical jokes and role reversals, servants dressed as masters, men dressed as women, and so forth. People roaming the streets in costumes, their faces blackened. Shakespeare's play Twelfth Night features many of the traditional elements of the holiday. It was brought over to this country by English settlers. George and Martha Washington, for example, did not usually do much for Christmas itself except go to church, but they often had elaborate Twelfth Night celebrations. It wasn't until the mid-1800s that Christmas became the primary holiday of the season in America, and at that point, Twelfth Night celebrations simply disappeared. It's the birthday of Umberto Eco, born in Alessandria, Italy, 1932, studied medieval aesthetics, wrote his doctoral thesis on Thomas Aquinas. A friend challenged him to write a detective novel, and so he did. He set it in a 14th century Benedictine abbey. It was more than 500 pages long. The first 100 pages were very difficult, rather tedious. He refused to take them out, and it became an international bestseller in 1980, The Name of the Rose. It was on this day in 1914, Henry Ford announced that he was going to double the pay of his workers, pay them $5 for an 8-hour day, up from $2.34 for a 9-hour day. He did it because Ford was experiencing high turnover rates, And indeed, after he raised their pay, turnover dropped drastically, and the company's profits doubled between 1914 and 1916. And it's the day on which construction of the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco began, 1933. It was finished 4½ years later. Here's a poem for today by W.S. Merwin entitled To the New Year. With what stillness, at last, you appear in the valley, your first sunlight reaching down to touch the tips of a few high leaves that do not stir as though they had not noticed and did not know you at all. Then the voice of a dove calls from far away in itself to the hush of the morning. So, this is the sound of you here and now, whether or not anyone hears it. This is where we have come with our age, our knowledge, such as it is, and our hopes, such as they are, invisible before us, untouched, and still possible. To the New Year, by W.S. Merwin, from his collected poems, 1996 to 2011, published by Library of America, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity, introducing a 10-minute fit test to challenge memory, attention, and problem-solving to calculate baseline scores. Learn more at lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch. Thank you.
25 minutes past the hour, and you are tuned to Juno Afternoon. Next we'll be featuring a story that was recorded as part of the Mudroom Festival in December.
Our first storyteller is Bob Coghill. Bob is from Nenana, Alaska. He was born in Alaska, as was his dad. He's a liberal in a notoriously conservative Republican family. He wants to make this perfectly clear, particularly to the Bernie Sanders fans in the audience. Nenana is an Athabascan village at the confluence of the Nenana and Tanana rivers. Bob's story and his whole life has to do with being raised in a remote interior Alaska village. Bob has always been uncomfortable as a very pale person. Right now, he's rocking quite a beard. Please help me welcome Bob to the stage.
Well, thank you for being here, and wow, what a lot of people. I have my family and all of my friends seem to be here. So I wanted to tell this story about where I'm from, which is Nenana, a little indigenous village on the Tanana River. I was in Ecuador a couple of weeks ago, and somebody asked me if this was the first time I'd been in a third world country, and I had to say no. That I was raised in a third world country. So my family settled in Nenana 99 years ago. My grandfather bought a store there, or created a store there. My dad ran it for 45 or so years. My sister runs it today. So we have 99 years in that community. However, most of the residents of the community have about 10,000 years in the community, so we're the newcomers on the block. So my story starts, this is part one of my story, starts in 1960. I was 8 years old. My father, who we're going to hear a lot about and question his judgment as a parent, he bought a bicycle for me, and it was much too large. I think he thought that, well, I can save myself the trouble of buying that next bike by giving him one that's huge. So the only way I could get started on this bike was to jump off of a box, which he had put in front of our house, and then pedal like mad. And I could go to only one other place in the town, and that was at the store where he had set another block for me to land on. So I had a 4-block trip that I could take, or I could go just around the corner. And so Nenana is very cold in the winter, and it flooded every summer. So the roads were basically silt, just this very fine silt. And as I was bicycling along on my too large bike, the silt monsters got my front tire, and I went into a ditch, which was full of flood water and rose bushes, and I got tangled up. That bar there came up, and at 8 years old, I wasn't worried about having children, but I still did have two, so it wasn't permanent. Joe came along. Joe was a big kid. I mean, I knew who Joe was, but I'm sure he didn't know who I was. Joe came along and extracted me from the ditch, and he walked me with dignity back to my home with my bicycle, ignoring the fact that I had peed myself. So Joe has been my hero. Part two, and now we're going to go back to 1948. In 1948, my father and his brother had several little one-room cabins that were, how should we say, were the service places where women served the railroad workers and bachelors in the community, and you get the drift. And so he had these. Well, he fell in love with the Episcopal missionary nurse with the angelic face, my mother, and he proposed to her, and she said, yes, but you have to get rid of those cabins. So he went to his brother and said, Jack, we have to get rid of those cabins. Jack said, Bob, you can find another woman. But love will have its way, and the cabins were sold to poor people, and the ladies went to Fairbanks, and everybody was happy. Part three, 1968, I'm 15, 16 years old, and my dad, of course, has this grocery store, and we delivered groceries, and we delivered groceries as far as a club near Clear Air Force Base, which served at affordable prices. It served booze, it served burgers, and it served these women again. Not the same women, yet another generation. And so why was my father sending me to a whorehouse? I don't know. But there I was, and I arrived before school, 6, 7 o'clock in the morning, I would arrive. And one day I arrived, and sitting with the groceries, delivered the groceries, and there's Joe sitting there with the woman who's in her dressing gown. And so he calls me over and says, you know, Bobby, which is my real name, Bobby, this is, you know, this is so-and-so. And anyway, he bought me breakfast, and he sat me down by the youngest of these ladies, and she insisted that I put ketchup on my eggs. And that is, there we go with the kindness of strangers. And part four is today. Today, Joe's mother passed away about 3 weeks ago. And Joe's mother was the mother of Miss Alaska. She was the mother of one of the presidents of Doyon, one of the chairmen of Tanana Chiefs Conference, mother of the first girl I kissed. She was a very important person, and I haven't been able to tell this story before, but now that she's gone, I can tell the story. Thank you very much, and have a good time tonight.
That's Bob Coghill, recorded live during December's Mudrooms presentation.
What we most often hear is bad news about our teens. That alters what we know is true. Most Alaska teenagers are doing positive things. They're volunteers, role models, and much more. Spirit of Youth tells these stories.
On my Otna side, my mom is from Chistochina. I'm also from Teslina on my dad's side. And on my Tlingit side, my grandma is from Cake.
That's 18-year-old Lakaya Engerbretson of Chistochina. Right now, she lives in Anchorage and is in her first year of studies at UAA.
I am going for elementary education because I've grown up in places where you don't have native teachers. And I know a lot of kids benefit from having a teacher that looks like them and learns like them and understands the home struggles that they're going through and the struggles that they're going through in the community. Kids need a teacher that understands that, and they learn better and they feel more accepted and like they can learn when they have a teacher that accepts that.
Lakaya says she's had her own role models along the way.
There was a Native teacher in the school. She wasn't my teacher. She was an elementary school teacher. But the fact that, hey, this lady looks like me and she's a professional educator and she's, you know, molding tiny minds was something really encouraging to me.
Lakaya says her goals as an educator go beyond the classroom.
Create a charter school where students are able to learn both the Western curriculum as well as the language and the traditions and traditional art and traditional food and nutrition, and they're able to get the mix of that so that students don't get this idea in their head that they have to separate the two. And in fact, they can be more successful by fitting them together and balancing them.
I'm Shanna Sheehy.
Do you know of a teenager making a difference where you live? Take some time right now to nominate them for Spirit of Youth. Get more information at spiritofyouth.org.
Listen to this story again at spiritofyouth.org.
Support comes from GCI, using social media to keep customers up to date with maintenance updates, community events, products, services, and more. On Facebook at Facebook/GCIAK, Twitter handle, and Instagram, GCIAK. Mondays are back at the Diamond Park Aquatic Center, now open Monday through Friday from 6 a.m. until 8 p.m., Saturdays 9 a.m. until 6 p.m., and Sundays, noon until 6 p.m. Schedules are available online at juno.org/parkrec/diamondpark. For more information, call Diamond Park Aquatic Center at 586-2782.
Bird note. Coast to coast, border to border, forest to feeder, the downy woodpecker goes about its business in 49 states. It turns up everywhere there are trees, except Hawaii and in the deserts of the Southwest. The downy is the smallest woodpecker in the United States. It might have been named by comparing it to its larger cousin, the hairy woodpecker, which looks quite similar. Where the downy has soft, fluffy feathers, especially at the back of its head, the hairy's feathers look stiff and bristly. The flash of red on the woodpecker's head brings a bit of cheer to your winter feeder. It's the male that has the red. The female sports only black and white feathers. And there's another difference. The female searches for insects and other tasty tidbits on large limbs and the trunk of a tree, while the male works farther out, on smaller branches. But add a suet cake to your winter bird banquet, and you'll probably bring the downy woodpecker right up close. Learn how to serve up a banquet for your birds, and sign up for weekly preview email, all on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann.
Gomez for the hour. You are tuned to listener-supported KTUO and KRNN-FM here on a Juno afternoon. Our next guests are Sonny Hayden, Donna Knight Staten, talking about Thursday's Compassionate Friends meeting. Thank you very much for coming to the station today.
Thank you. Thank you.
So first of all, who are the Compassionate Friends?
Compassionate Friends is a group of parents here in Juneau who have had a very terrible experience. They've lost a child. And we have come together to form a chapter here in Juneau for parents.
Compassionate Friends is a national nonprofit organization. It was actually founded in 1969. A young chaplain brought together two sets of parents who lost a child, and so it spans all over the world. There's about 650 chapters in the U.S., and there's a few different chapters in Alaska, but none in Juneau. And so as we've been on this journey ourselves, we started to see the need for a local chapter.
What can one say to someone who's had a child pass away?
That's partially that's what our group is about. It's really hard for a person that's lost a child to accept other people's condolences, and this group is a group of people that have actually gone through the same experience. So we'll be able to come together in friendship, come together for support, and we will give coping skills and just help parents. But it's also not just for parents, it's for parents, grandparents, and adult siblings.
Yeah, it's important to distinguish that this is not, you know, none of us are certified counselors. We're family members, we're parents. And so we want to, you know, be upfront about that. Like Donna said, this is really about understanding and hope and friendship. It's a very unique journey to be on, and we all have, hopefully, lots of friends and family members that are supportive, but connecting with other people who have actually been through it is something that is very unique. It's difficult for people to understand how to comfort, how to console, the right things to say, the wrong things to say. And it's a pretty, I would say, a lonely journey at times. And so we share a bond that we don't really want to share, but we're here. And, you know, we've been drafted into this club that no one wants to be a part of. And we have really just found it on our hearts to, as we navigate ourselves, to reach out to other folks. There's too many people in this town who have lost children, and we just want to, you know, help support, offer friendship, and again, offer a safe place. It's a confidential place.
It's confidential.
Yes, everything will be treated confidentially. And really, I guess I can't emphasize enough, it's just a safe place where people can share their stories, they can share their grief, they can share their hope. Hopefully there's moments of laughter and true, you know, true friendships that will come out of this is what our hope is.
Your group is called Compassionate Friends. Is it just limited to siblings and family members by relatives?
It is. Yes. It's parents, grandparents, and siblings.
And adult siblings, actually, what we're looking for.
Yeah, over 16. It's part of the national group policies and guidelines.
Will this be your first meeting?
Yes, this Thursday will be our first organized meeting. It's taken a couple months to get organized, to get chartered, and we're ready to get rolling now.
How can people contact you? And I imagine you can give details about the meeting location.
Yes, absolutely. We'll be meeting the first Thursday of each month at the Pioneers Home, 7 to 9. And I think the first announcement that we put out, I just put out on a Facebook page, and you know, everyone has shared it. So they can contact Donna or myself, and we can provide our phone numbers here online, and they can give us a call. We have an email address that they can also send an email to, and then show up at the Pioneers Home at 7 o'clock on Thursday. We'll keep posting announcements through Facebook as well. Once we're up and running, we'll probably establish a specific Facebook page. Right now, it's just going through our personal ones.
Do you have any idea how many people in Juneau have suffering?
I don't.
I think a lot in the past 10 years. I just think about the time when I was growing up and no child passed away. And it seems like with my children, they've had friends that have passed away, numbers of friends that have passed away for all of my kids. So I think it's more and more common. Suicide is something that's more common.
I think as we've seen our kids grow up, and we both have adult children now, and I still have younger ones, it seems like at least once a year, you know, somebody that they knew that was within their age group had passed away. And you start noticing that more once you've actually gone through it yourself. You pay attention more when you're reading the obituaries, and it's been shocking. And, you know, I think we feel the pain that other parents feel in a way that we never expected to experience. And so that level, I mean, the title alone, Compassionate Friends, really embodies what we want to do, what the organization does.
And I think every time a child does pass away in this community or someplace else, you know, that you know the parents, I just go through this kind of grief myself, because I hate for them to have to experience what I went through and what Sunny went through. It's just, it's horrific. So,
what's the best thing someone can do when they know somebody or have a relative that's passed away?
I don't know if I could say the best thing, but I think an important thing is to not ignore them. It's so uncomfortable for a lot of people. They don't know what to say. They don't know what to offer. And so a lot of times people say nothing. And I'm just talking from personal experience. It's more difficult as a parent to have others, even people that I know, kind of ignore the situation and not talk about my daughter or not ask how I'm doing. So I think reaching out is incredibly important, but it's also difficult for the person on the receiving end to articulate what you can do for someone. You know, there is no solution, but I think being there, holding someone's hand, letting them cry, letting them break down if they need to, and not trying to offer solutions, because there really isn't a solution to that kind of grief.
Yeah, exactly.
Any meeting is this Thursday at Pioneer Home? What time can you, please?
7:00. Or we will be there a little bit beforehand just to set up, because this is our first meeting. But 7:00, first Thursdays of the month at the Pioneer's Home. Right as you walk in the front doors, the main dining area is off to the left, and that's where we'll be.
And you mentioned you had a Facebook presence.
We don't have a specific page. We've just been advertising through our personal Facebook accounts. And again, my name is Sunny Haid and Donna Knight Staten. They can find us on Facebook. I can share our phone numbers. My home number, or cell number, actually, 723-1889. That's for Sunny. And then Donna is 321-4232. And we're happy to talk with anyone that's interested in joining the group.
And we also will have a lending library with books that we're going to continue to gather. We have magazines that come from the national organization that are really helpful to read, because it's actual testimonials or anecdotal discussions from parents who have lost a child and what it feels like to go through it. And I think when I first got into the Compassionate Friends, it really helped me realize that, boy, I'm feeling the same things they're feeling, and what I'm doing is not totally out of bounds. So we want to give that to the participants here in Juneau.
Yeah, that is an important piece there. You just don't know what the right thing to do or how to act, how to respond to people. And there's nothing like talking to another parent who has been there and can actually look you in the eye and say, I know that feeling. I've been there. It does get better with time. You don't get over it, but you learn how to live again. And, you know, we're at we're at stages where we've moved through, you know, at least that first year. We're all at the other ladies that we've been working with, different stages, but hopefully at stages where we can offer hope. And I'm hoping that other folks come that are even further into their sort of grief journey that can also offer support, understanding.
Donna and Sunday, thank you very
much. Thank you. Thank you so much.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM.